You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Episode 108, The Paradox.
Welcome to The Paradox with your attending, Dr. Eric Larson. He is a practicing anesthesiologist and clinical assistant professor at Michigan State University College of Human Medicine. Listen in as he takes you behind the scenes of what practicing medicine in today's ever-changing world is like with another doctor. The Paradox is a fun and accidentally informative show for physicians, patients, or anyone who has ever found themselves in a waiting room.
Welcome to The Paradox. I'm your host, Dr. Eric Larson. Thank you for joining me as we explore the U.S. medical system in a fun and informative format through expert analysis. And today's experts are me and my wife, Dr. Marcy Larson. As you may recall from episode 100 and then also episode 25, Marcy is a pediatrician here, practicing general pediatrics in Grand Rapids, and she has made it a ministry of sorts to help parents deal with grief of losing their children. Now, as many regular listeners realize, Marcy and I lost our son, Andy, on August 15th of 2018 in a car accident. In this episode, we'll describe in a little bit of detail what happened, but you can certainly go back to episode 25, so that's theparadox.com/025, and you can get far more details and get a better feeling for what we were like back in November of 2018. And for those who hang around till the very end of every show, my son Andy's solo, What He Did at Christmas of 2017, closes the show. It's a teeny bit of tribute I can give to him and his amazing talent. We're very fortunate we even had that recording. It was almost sort of by happenstance at a rehearsal that Marcy just had on her phone. And I think it's just a testament to really the way our technology is now, where you just have so much data and things just hanging around on your phone, whether it's photos or videos, and never really know if you're going to want those things later. I have a number of videos of Andy just doing stupid stuff, just 10, 12-year-old kid stuff, diving in piles of leaves or whatever. And now you really cherish those. And those are things that, yeah, it's funny. I always thought it was sentimental about things before, but much more so since his passing. The goal of this episode is a chat actually with the Kent County Medical Society, of which I was a former president. I host their fireside chats. We've discussed a number of things on race and culture, and this will be grief. And we're going to be discussing specifically as a physician, and I think as an ancillary benefit too for people who aren't physicians but know people who are dealing with parental grief, and honestly, grief of any sort. But we're going to focus primarily on our journey through grief, what Marcy has learned through her podcast, which is quite a bit, and the interactions patients have, families with kids who have passed away, with the medical system, what pitfalls there are for those of us who are physicians, and how we can help each other. Even if you're not a physician, I think there'll be a lot of stuff that you can take away in this as helpful pointers if you're dealing with a friend or a family member who is dealing with grief. Certainly if you're someone who has personally experienced it recently, this may provide some comfort to you and some help, hopefully. But it will definitely give you some pointers and things to say, not to say, what to do, how to help people who are dealing with the loss of a loved one, either child or certainly a spouse or someone else close to them. To that end, I'd recommend that you listen to Marcy's podcast, which is called Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom. She's 65 episodes in. She's even more faithful than I am for coming out with a weekly episode. And she's actually booked way out into next year as far as interviews for parents. And the premise of the show is quite simple. It's talking to a parent about their child, about what happened, and what they've learned, what's happened to them, or sort of how they get by. It's a show that will really help people, I think, who are grappling with ways to help their friend or family member get through this episode, or if they are personally experiencing grief, as certainly as with a child. It'll provide a lot of insight and, I think, hope, and really, honestly, just a recognition that the things that you're experiencing, the emotions you're feeling, are normal, and that, quite frankly, every emotion is normal, and even having them all simultaneously is normal. I will speak to that personally. And if you're thinking grief is not something that is a present concern of yours, just recognize that at some point, if you love someone, there will be loss. You know, whether it's a love that's lost or someone passes away, whether it's a parent, a relative of some sort, a spouse, or a child, and that you need to not only know how to help others, but also to help yourself. And so I think there's a lot of information to be gathered in this discussion. And certainly by listening to Marcy's show, you can learn a lot too. And I think these are just useful life skills to have, whether or not you're a physician. Particularly if you're a physician, there's certain things here that I think will be extra pertinent for you. And I think you'll get a lot out of this. And finally, I would like to remind you that this was a live recording. And there are a bunch of doctors. And some of them are, we'll say, seasoned. And they have trouble using Zoom. And so there are times when people forget to mute their microphones. And so it might be a little bit distorted audio then. There's also a question posed by one of my colleagues later in the episode, which I will just repeat because, of course, it comes to the Zoom recording and I don't have an actual audio of that. So I'll just repeat his question and then you'll hear Marcy answer. But without further ado, I'd like to introduce Dr. Marcy Larson. And this is our discussion for the Kent County Medical Society and its Fireside Chat program. Enjoy. All right. Welcome to, I guess, is the fourth or fifth Fireside Chat we've had sponsored by the Kent County Medical Society. We're actually sitting in front of a fire because it's now November in Michigan. And as you know, it's that time.
Thought it would be better. So back up. Let's show the fire. Here's our nice fire for our Fireside Chat.
So hopefully you have a nice, comfy, warm place to hang out here for an hour with us. I'm joined with my wife, Dr. Marcy Larson, who's a pediatrician in town. I'll go into introductions in just a moment, but I want to get some things out of the way first. This is obviously sponsored by the Kent County Medical Society and the Kent County Medical Foundation for providing this the funding for this process. So I appreciate that, and I hope that all of you have an opportunity to share this with other people, and you can certainly watch this and the previous Fireside Chats we've had in the series where we've talked about racism and cultural differences. So things that obviously affect us from either society and also within a profession. So I think those are better ways to help understand things. Tonight we're going to be talking about grief and helping our patients grieve. And we'll go into sort of why that's pertinent to us if you don't already know us personally. This is something that I think is important not only for us as physicians, but as just people who are obviously, you know, dealing with our friends, our family, and our colleagues, and as they deal with grief, and then either helping them with other their family members or ourselves. I'm joined by my wife, Dr. Marcy Larson, who's a pediatrician here at Forest Hills Pediatrics in private practice as well. She is a general pediatrician, and she's been in practice about as long as I have. She started a couple months after we moved to Grand Rapids back in 2004. So I don't know if you started in 2005 or you started...
January 2005. I think the 5th of January. Mm-hmm.
She runs a podcast as well. It's called Losing a Child, Always Annie's Mom. And that's obviously going to be sort of what we're going to discuss tonight. Both Marcy and I went to medical school at the University of Iowa. We graduated in 2000. We then traveled all over looking at residencies and ended up with a match at the University of Iowa, hospitals and clinics. I did anesthesia. She did pediatrics. And I guess that's pretty much its way of introduction, at least for who we are professionally. We have three children, Catherine, Andrew, and Peter. And the subject of today's show, I guess, or chat, will be about Andy, and mm-hmm. who was never really Andrew. He's always just Andy. And so I think we'll just start by telling the story about Andy. I don't know if you wanted to start or if you'd like me to.
It doesn't matter. I can start if I can tell a story if you want.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll start and then you can maybe come in.
Okay, so, that's fine.
So Andy is our middle child. He was 14 on August 15th, 2018. We were traveling as a family. His younger brother, Peter, Marcy, and I were going to a Whitecaps baseball game on US 131. It was about 7 in the evening because the game was at 7:15 or something like that. And we're going for a work event, actually, with Marcy's office there. Practice they had rented a, you know, thing for one of the sideline areas.
Yeah, one of the decks, yeah. Yeah,
one of the decks.
Rented a deck and have unlimited food. I remember Peter saying he didn't eat all day because he was saving up room for what he was going to eat, and they were talking the whole way on how much food they were going to be get to eat at the baseball game. So, yeah, we were just chatting about life. Andy had was just starting high school. He was in freshman orientation at the West Michigan Aviation Academy, and you know, life was good.
He'd actually just made it to the onto the soccer team and the JV soccer team, and he was actually named a starter. And his first game was, this was a Thursday. His first game was on Saturday.
It was a Wednesday, actually.
Or it was Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday. And so it was going to be on Saturday that it was his first game. And then school would start on Monday. And so on our way to the game, as we're in the exit lane, as many of you know, on 131, in that exit lane onto West River Drive into Comstock Park, especially during games, the traffic slows down to almost zero. I mean, you're going just a few miles an hour as you're trying to exit. And anyway, as we were pretty much at a standstill, we were struck from behind by a car traveling highway speeds of 70 miles an hour. We were thrown off the road into the shoulder.
Through a sign. Right sign, exit only sign. We went straight through that sign.
And Peter was knocked unconscious. Marcy was knocked unconscious. I sustained some injuries to my face and my head. And Andy was killed instantly. So I pulled Andy from the car. At the time, nothing seemed real. I mean, he's very small, and so it was actually not hard lifting him out of the car. He's a super tiny kid for 14. He was maybe like 80 pounds or something. And I took him to the side of the road, and I was performing CPR for 15 minutes or so.
You saying that you did not think he was going to die. You thought, you know, I just need to get in an IV. I just need to do this. I just need to do that. I mean, you just don't think that your own child will die on the side of the road. It just doesn't seem at all possible.
So anyway, I worked on him for a while. He was bleeding profusely, but he wasn't responsive. He wasn't breathing. And then eventually the EMS, the firefighters came and they gave me a mask. And so I ventilated him after. I let another person do some compressions after a while. And eventually they took me away to be with Marcy.
I didn't know. I remember just waking up and turning and seeing, you know, three people around my little boy doing chest compressions and him having a needle sticking out of his chest. And just me being, I just couldn't believe what was happening, actually. Just didn't seem like it possibly could be real. And then they ended up putting me into a fire truck originally to be with Peter because I was just kind of screaming at that point. And then they then moved me to an ambulance and said it was to check me out. But in fact, they moved us both, Eric and I, both to an ambulance to tell us, despite our best efforts, we were unable to save your son. Words I'll never forget.
That was a long trip back to the hospital. Peter had already gone to the hospital. And so Marcy and I traveled in an ambulance. And Peter was already being evaluated at that time. And I ask if you could just mute your audio.
Yeah, we've got somebody not on mute.
So that was a long night. I don't think we slept much, and Peter stayed as an inpatient overnight because of his concussion. But essentially,
yeah, we
all
just
us,
stayed in the hospital. Then the whole family.
All of us were okay. I mean, essentially, which was the kind of the jarring thing that the impact was pretty much on the right side of the car, which is where Andy was seated. And he was the one who obviously who's lost his life that night. So that started us down a difficult path, obviously. So I was full time. Marcy worked part time, and I guess we can. I went back to work after a couple weeks, probably 3 weeks or so. Mm-hmm. And I think my group was really great in that they allowed me to just work at one surgical location. And I think we can sort of get into sort of the things about afterwards. But then I just kind of slowly worked myself. They covered all my call, obviously, until I was ready. And I think I took call.
You didn't take call for quite a while.
Maybe actually. November, December or something. Yeah. It was months. It was probably the rest of that quarter I didn't do anything. So, and then I kind of slowly eased my way back into the sort of the normal routine. And it was a different journey for you, obviously.
Yeah, Eric had said how helpful it was for him to get back to seeing patients and back to work. And so I went back just a couple of weeks after him. I was back, I don't know, sometime in later September, I think. So, or mid-September maybe. So like 4 to 5 weeks or something. And I went back, but it was just so, so hard, incredibly hard, because doing pediatrics, everyone reminded me of Andy. Everyone who had a Michigan State sweatshirt on reminded me of Andy. Every soccer player was Andy. Every set of brothers was Andy. Everything was just so, such a reminder for me. And I would find myself crying between every patient. And I just felt like I wasn't doing my patients any good. And I wasn't, I certainly wasn't helping myself. And so I ended up taking a leave of absence really from the beginning of November and stayed home. I did some administrative work, but for the most part stayed home for the next year. And that ended up being really important for me to take that time to get my head in a better place so I could be a good physician again. And I have to say, for a long time, I feared that I wouldn't be able to go back, that I wouldn't be able to do that thing that I loved. I remember early on saying, I don't think I can do this anymore. And people would say, but that's who you are. You are a pediatrician. You will be able to do it again. But it was hard to believe that, I think. And what ultimately got me really back on track to be able to get back and see patients again was the fact that I started a podcast. And so I was trying to kind of help myself, and I thought, I'm going to listen to a podcast for grieving parents and hopefully be able to glean some help from that. And I looked and I looked and I couldn't find one. And then I told Eric, I don't think there's a podcast for grieving parents. And he thought that was crazy. So he started looking, and there wasn't a podcast for grieving parents at that time. And I just crazily said, I think maybe I was meant to do one. And I don't know what even possessed me to say that. And I regretted saying it almost immediately because Eric started encouraging me right away to go ahead and start. And after a couple of months, it took me a couple of months, I did. I got a website. I started a podcast. And that's truly when I started to heal. And it was being able to meet other parents, talk to other parents, having a place for my grief, having a purpose for my grief, something to do with it, and not just feeling stuck. So it was tremendous, and it turned everything I was thinking completely around. And now I feel like I can have more compassion for people and do things that I wasn't ready to do for a long time,
Yeah. There's a lot of uncertainty going back to work. I mean, there are a lot of things that I didn't anticipate. I think, for me, I guess one of the biggest things, I didn't realize how many people I knew. I think, you feel obligated when you see people that you have to sort of tell the story, or, at least they feel like they have to say something. And the one thing you don't really want is a lot of people. I mean, I think at least that was my feeling. And I was comforted by people, like with the visitation. It was actually really uplifting having, I mean, there were hundreds of people who came to our visitation. Going back to work, it was anxiety provoking to have so many people just around, and that you every day you're with a new people, and because there's an aspect of you wondering what they're thinking, and what do they think is comfortable, what to say, what's okay to behavior, is it okay for them? I'm sure I know they're thinking, like, can I talk about my kids? Can I talk about, some stupid thing that's happening in my life that would have been a funny story in the OR, but now maybe it'd be hurtful to someone because now it's talking about, because they have a kid to have a complaint about, right? I mean, these are all things we just do normal sort of conversations. And so that was really helpful to me just to be in one place for a little while. I mean, I was, obviously there's some things like, the last person I masked was my dead son. I mean, could I do that again as an anesthesiologist and, mass ventilates for someone, which, I mean, went fine. But I mean, there was a little bit of me is always kind of worried if I'm going to freak out or panic or something like that.
Families that I had known forever, they just did not know how to act around me at all. They were just very uncomfortable. And early on when I tried to go back, I didn't want them to talk about it. Because I would break down so easily. And because my emotions were just right there, it was just below the surface. And I was scared to kind of show that emotionality. Now, of course, they aren't quite as high, but I also don't feel as fearful to let people see it a little bit. I think that's been a huge change for me, too, is this realization that doctors are people, too, and doctors can feel emotion, and it's okay to show some emotion as a doctor. You can't be weak and feel like your patients have to support you, but to show some emotionality and some compassion is really important. And it has changed my practice in medicine for sure. I feel like now I actually care even more for my patients than I used to. And I feel like I used to care for my patients in general, but now I understand pain and suffering so much more. So, I recently had someone that is going to become my patient. They're having a new baby and they lost their first baby from SIDS. And so I talked to her on the phone for a good amount of time beforehand. And afterwards, I said to my office manager and some of my partners, I said, every one of those patients has to come to me. Like everyone, because I get it and I can understand that, and they feel more comfortable knowing that I've experienced that and I can relate to that. So it's just important. And not that you can't learn some of that too, because you can. And that's what I try to do to help people to be able to understand that compassion a little bit more. But, I in the past, I had taken care of families who had lost a child. And I would never talk about that child. And that was so wrong, because that's what they love. I remember reading something recently that a father had written and said, don't you know that when you say my son's name, it sounds like music to me? So that's a big change and something that I have found, that don't be afraid to talk about the person who has died, whether it's their spouse or their child or some other close loved one. Ask them how they're doing. Use that person's name, because they love to hear it. And if you have children that you've lost, everyone loves to talk about their kids. And just because Andy has died doesn't mean I don't want to talk about him anymore, because I do. I want to talk about him just as I still talk about Catherine and Peter. So you just can't make that subject totally taboo. And I think to realize that if then that person starts to cry, it does not mean that you did something wrong or you made them cry, because you didn't. Because the emotions, like I said before, they're right there. You're almost going to cry anyway. There is no way that whatever that person said made me more sad, because I can't be more sad. I can't have more sorrow in my heart than I do at all the time. And so having someone bring up Andy's name, even if now I have some tears in my eyes, it actually makes my heart happy. It makes my heart happy to know that you remembered him, you know?
Yeah, well, without a doubt. I mean, actually, I had a patient come who mentioned it to me just last week. It said Andrew, which to me, again, I didn't even register because he was always Andy. Even when he's in trouble, he's Andy.
What was funny is I remember him saying one time, Andrew, who's Andrew? And like, oh, honey, that's your name. And he goes, I'm not Andrew, I'm Andy. And like, yeah, you're right. You are right. We will not call you Andrew ever.
So I had a patient who knew the story. She knew someone I worked with and who knew and said, you know, I'm sorry about the loss of your son. And she knew she'd gone to some concerts and heard him and said, I'm so sorry about Andrew. And so I think that's the big thing that I think with the person who's grieving, at least this is my experience when I was in the OR, it was actually really nice to kind of get that part of the conversation out of the way. So if you haven't seen someone, there's been a loss, I think just acknowledge that it happened and then just kind of see what happens with that person. If they want to talk about it some more, they will. If they don't, they kind of, you know, it also depends on what your relationship is with the person. If you're close friends, you'll probably want to talk a little bit more. If not, or if they're just not in the mood, they just won't. But I think getting it out of the way, it's the more time that goes by, especially when you're at quarters like we are in an operating room, I'm sure it'd be similar in an office setting, that it's just like this big elephant in the room, right? And if it's not been acknowledged, then there's this anxiety, like, when's it going to come up? When's it going to come up? You know, are they thinking about it? I'm thinking about it. And so it's almost easier just saying, it's not unprofessional to address it and then just kind of just move on. And just to not expect that you're going to have a long conversation or, you know, comfort someone, because frankly, especially if you're an acquaintance, you're not going to comfort them probably a whole lot outside of just saying, you know, I'm sorry for your loss and go on. So I think, you know, that leads, I guess, to the, you know, your grief journey is different. Everyone's is different, but
yes.
I think, you know, yours is unique in that you have a podcast and I've tried to keep up with your podcast, but it comes out weekly And, you know, if you're interested, I mean, it's a fantastic, you do a fantastic job, but what do you think what have you learned, I guess, from the people you've talked to, because you've talked to tons of parents, both men and women, mostly mm-hmm. women, but some men as well. What's been their experience when it comes to dealing with the medical, you know, arena? Like, because they're all, presumably, at some point, they interacted with someone in medicine with the death of their child. So what if you sort of learned that we need to, that would be useful for people to know?
Well, I think I've talked a lot about, you know, to parents whose children die from illness. So that means they've had long-standing relationships with the medical community. And they actually, you know, when you have a child who is going through a lot, like cancer or a heart disease or something, that you're really involved in that medical system, they almost become your friends in some ways too. And so when that child dies, they lose so much. They lose so much more than just their child. They've lost now their support system because they really relied on these people as almost kind of their friends and their community, and they feel really cut off. So it is really appreciated when someone still will reach out, you know, and whether you go to the funeral or you don't go to the funeral, you know, maybe a card, maybe something to let them know that your child wasn't just a diagnosis to them and wasn't just another number. I think the same could be said for a spouse too. I have a good friend that we've met in a support group. Her son died at the University of Michigan. He had a congenital heart disease. He was never home. He never made it home. But he was there for, I think, 7 months. And they finally had to just stop everything. And she went back on what would have been his first birthday to visit the ICU there, to visit the cardiologist. And she saw a cardiology fellow in the hallway. And the fellow had known that she was coming. And she started to cry. And the fellow immediately apologized. I'm so sorry. I told myself I wasn't going to do that. I'm so sorry I'm doing that. And for this mom, it was the best gift she could have had. That is, out of that entire visit, that's the only thing she shared with us. She didn't share about seeing anyone else. She shared talking to that fellow who cried in the hallway. just for a few minutes. They didn't have a long interaction, but to her it was like, wow, my little boy meant something to you. And I think it's important to be able to show a little bit of that humanity. I mean, this woman didn't fall into a heap. She certainly didn't now have to be comforted, but she did show compassion. And so I think that's important for people to do. And again, you know, afterwards, when people come in, ask how they're doing, say something about their husband or whoever, their wife. You know, don't feel like it's a taboo subject. Just mention it and ask how they're doing and ask if there's anything you can do to help them or offer to do something. Like if it's, and if it's an outside of the professional setting, you know, if it's someone you know, just, you know, as a friend or something, maybe a coworker, offer to do something specific for them. I mean, I remember someone, a friend of, a mom of one of Peter's friends said, I'm going to Costco today. What can I pick up for you? So it wasn't, can I go get something for you? Because that my answer would have been no. But when she said, I'm going to Costco today, what can I get? I gave her a list of three things that I really needed from Costco because you know what? It was really hard for me to go to Costco. And that can be hard for many people. So I think, though, I mean, that's just a little bit different on whether you know them professionally or more personally, but something to keep in mind for just life in general.
So, and then, you know, there are also things that people say, especially medical professions, yeah. Right? So, I mean, how do you, what do you say to a parent who, let's say it's a patient you've had for a long time and they die from cancer or something like that. What do you say, sorry for your loss and, you know, I feel for you and understand?
I have to say one of the best things that I ever got was when someone said, I have no words for you. Because they're in that, they're acknowledging the fact that nothing they say will make it better. Because in truth, nothing they say will make it better. So for you to offer a word of comfort is actually not helpful. It is not helpful at all. And, you know, for Christians like ourselves, and if you know that maybe your patient is a Christian and you say, oh, they're in heaven now, or oh, they're not in pain anymore, oh, this, oh, that, like, okay, you know what? That parent knows that. I know that he's not in pain anymore, but that does not make it easier for me. And now what you've done, which was not what you meant to do, now you've added guilt on top of it. So now I'm already missing my son. I'm already super sad. And now I'm feeling guilty, like I'm a bad Christian because I would rather have him here in pain instead of in heaven not in pain. So it just added another negative thing. Now, if they say to you, well, I'm really glad he's not in pain anymore, then you go, that is wonderful. That is a comfort, right? You can acknowledge if they said something, but don't actually have it be your idea just because it just feels, and I've talked to many, many parents. This is not isolated to me. This is what a lot of people tell me, that they just get really irritated when people try to offer kind of platitudes to see if they can make them feel better. When you just, what you really need to do is be willing to go to the dark place and just sit and just say, this sucks. This is terrible. I know how horribly hard this must be for you. And then let me know if there's anything I can do for you. Can I do this? Can I do that? Just offering some things. Ask what kind of support they have. You know, do you have someone that you can talk to? Are you getting help with things? I mean, that kind of stuff can be helpful, is to try to, you know, maybe talk about that and ask what help they're getting and ask if they have things, people that they can ask for help. You know, I remember you talking about how you were in the OR one day and someone said, yeah, my neighbor's son just died. And I don't know what to do. And it somehow came up that I used to see him always mowing the lawn outside. And I remember you giving them the advice, go mow his lawn. Go mow the neighbor's lawn, because you know how hard that's going to be to not have their teenage son be able to do that. That would be torture to have to go out and do it yourself. So if you would go over and say, you know what, I'm going to mow your lawn, I'm mowing my lawn. I want to mow your lawn for you. I'm sure that would end up taking a huge weight off. So just some of those little type of things, think about little things that might be able to help them. And if it's you are in a professional kind of relationship, just ask, who do you think you could ask to do that for you? I think that would be helpful.
Yeah. I consider myself fortunate. I never had suffered from depression. And I don't think, and I don't know that I was depressed when he died and very sad, but I don't know that I don't know what the clinical, I'm an anesthesiologist. I don't know what the clinical depression is, but I mean, I definitely felt that anhedonia, right? That just the disinterest in doing anything. And so simple.
And everything is hard. Little things are hard.
Yeah, like just getting even ready for the day or something is just like it's an effort. And so I think, you know, that people just coming in and actually either just saying they're going to go do something. And like you said, with the Costco example, but mm-hmm. we had people come in, they just showed up and said, hey, we're going for a walk. Mm-hmm. Can I take you right now? Versus calling you and saying, hey, is there something I can do? Or do you want to go for a walk or do something later? You probably would have said no.
I remember people coming to the door and bringing food and their parting words being, call me if there's anything I can do for you. And as I would shut the door, I would be thinking in my head, I am never going to call you. I'm never going to call you. And because it just, that takes too much effort, actually. I really need you to come to me. And I know that's a lot to expect, but it's what I need. And I try in my podcast to encourage people to ask for help just because I know how hard it is and how hard it was for me. You know, this last week, I actually interviewed a physician's assistant and she was talking about how, I mean, she's having really a very, very difficult time. It's only been a few months since her daughter died. And she said, sometimes it just hits me that I still have to go home and empty the litter box. and she said that on her podcast. And then she emailed me the other day because this just was out this past Thursday. And she said, just so you know, my mom called me and she said, just so you know, I'm emptying the litter box the next time I come over. So it's just people don't think about that. Those little things just seem crazy hard to do when you just don't want to do anything. When it's just because it takes so much work just to grieve. Grieving takes a lot of work. So these little things can be hard to do. Now, sometimes those little things can be good because they keep your mind occupied. Like for you, even getting back to work, you needed that because you needed to keep your mind occupied. And for me, doing that, it was just it just hit too close to home because I was just seeing too many kids. And it was just reminding me of Andy too much. But yeah, I did some administrative stuff for that same purpose to keep my mind a little bit busy.
Well, and I think for professionally, it was helpful for me to go to work because although it was, there's a lot of anxiety seeing all these people for the first time, second time, third time, and then after a while you sort of get used to it. But those people who, you know, I care for them, they care for me. And so it was, I mean, there's sort of a support system in some respects, right? You know, you have a few different spheres in your life. You've got your friends, your family, and your, you know, people you work with. Mm-hmm. And to take one out, and, you know, I'm sure that's why it's difficult retiring, right? Because you lose a lot of those people. A lot of your world sort of disappears. And so it was sort of like that for losing Andy. So it was helpful going back and being around those people who I always assumed they cared for me. I assume that still, if you're out there. So I got comfort from being around them, even though just knowing that they shared in the pain, I guess the anguish of losing Andy. So you kind of mentioned a bunch of do's and don'ts. I mean, can you think of some stories of things that people have said or things that have happened? I mean, we've had a couple of them, like when Peter got his blood drawn, but or other things that people on your podcast have mentioned.
I mean, just to do that blood drawing story, it was a few months after Andy died. Peter had just been having a lot more trouble with his migraine headaches, you know, after this concussion and then just losing his brother. And so anyway, we had taken him to the neurologist and they wanted to do just a little bit of blood work just to make sure everything was okay. So I bring him in and the phlebotomist just is trying to make small talk because he's going to draw blood on a 12-year-old and thinks, well, he's probably nervous. And so I'm sure it was just very, very well-meaning and asked, how many brothers and sisters do you have? And that question, of course, froze him up and he didn't really know how to answer. And so he kind of faltered a little bit and he said, I have one sister because he just didn't want to go there. You know, he just didn't want to talk about Andy. And that is fine. I mean, it just depends. I've talked to a lot of different parents and how they answer that question. It's a very, very hard question to answer because you just don't know how to answer it because you don't really want to go into it with strangers. So anyway, he just said, I have one sister. And she just, you know, very quickly said, well, you don't sound too happy about that, thinking he didn't like his sister. And then he immediately started breaking down and crying. And I turned to her and I said, it's because his brother died just a couple of months ago in a car accident. And she said, oh. And then she had this kind of awkward pause. And then she said, well, you've got to look on the bright side. And I just kind of looked at her and I thought, what exactly would that be? I mean, there's really not a bright side here. I mean, it was just such a stupid thing to say. So it made me think about, though, how you just aren't ready. You just don't know what to say. And then you just end up saying something like the first thing that comes into your head, which was obviously completely wrong. I mean, she tried, but it made me start to think about how we need to educate people to be a little bit more ready for what they're going to come up with at that moment, to say something like, oh, I'm so sorry. I mean, just anything, but to try to make them feel better, because that's why I talked about that at the beginning, is don't try to offer some comfort when it's just a sucky situation. Just acknowledge that it's horrible and feel, you know, just feel that with them. You know, again, I think the best thing really is, I have no words for you. I'm so sorry. I mean, just to be able to say that is like, I've acknowledged how terrible this is. I've acknowledged I can't make it better. I've acknowledged that I care.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was a stupid thing for sure. But so, then again, she tried.
Yeah. Well, it's,
and I do have to give that too, because I've talked to a lot of parents too recently. Just that same woman that I talked to on the podcast, she talked about how her brother had never said anything to her after her daughter's death at all, and how incredibly hurtful that had been to her, that he didn't say anything.
Because he didn't know what to say.
He didn't know what to say. Yeah. And so I talked to her quite a bit and I said, I'm sure he cares. He just has no idea what to say. He doesn't want to say the wrong thing, so he says nothing. But I think talking to bereaved people across the board, saying nothing is a really bad idea. I mean, we will give you grace if you say the wrong thing, but when you say nothing, those are the ones that you actually kind of end up holding a grudge against. I mean, she's definitely the most angry at her brother, even though other people have said really stupid stuff to her. And she's talked about some of the stupid stuff, but it's easier to forgive that than the people that don't say anything. And I've been in groups now. You know, I'm just in a lot of grief groups now. So I'm in a women's grieving group that is with widows and bereaved moms. And it's the same thing for them. I mean, if they just, the people that don't acknowledge it, or when you had friends when you were couples and now they've just like, you know, they just don't have anything to do with you because you're not in a couple anymore. It's just so, so hurtful.
Yeah.
As opposed to saying, you know, saying something and trying something and inviting them to something. That's been a big theme for widows too, is that they don't even get invited places anymore. And they at least want the invitation. I mean, if you give the invitation, then they can say no. And then now that's put in their court. But if you say, I would like you to come, if you feel comfortable coming, please come. And that is much better than just not inviting them because you assume they're going to say no, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I guess along those lines, like I said earlier, I think, you know, in a professional setting for me, talking to colleagues, for me, I don't have much interaction with the patients. They're, you know, I talk to them for about 5, 6, 7 minutes and then they're asleep. But I speak, you know, obviously with the surgeons and the circulating staff. And again, it's not unprofessional to bring up the fact that there was, you know, there was this loss. And just, And again, getting out there and clearing the air, it's not unprofessional if there's some tears and stuff. I mean, obviously don't say it in front of a patient, you know, where it's going to...
Where it makes the patient feel awkward.
Yeah, it makes right. the patient yeah. feel awkward. And
you don't want to say it with a colleague and when the patient's like just hanging out in the room. I mean, if the patient knows you and brings it up to you, well, that's different. Right. I mean, I've certainly had plenty of patients bring stuff up to me. I have patients bring me gifts. I tear up in front of patients. Before COVID, I would have some moms give me a hug. We don't do that anymore. But, you know, I would have that. And they would be fine with me, you know, showing some emotion. And which I think was important. Because when you think about it as a pediatrician, you feel like, I think I feel like I almost am part of their family. Like a lot of times they feel like Dr. Larson is just part of our family. And Dr. Larson gives advice. And so... even though they don't really know me, they feel like they do. And so it's tough on patients too. And I think to give them that and to, because it was unfair when I first went back to, I told my nurse, I told the staff, just tell them not to talk about it. No talk about it. But that wasn't really fair to them because in some ways they needed to talk about it too. They needed to say, I'm so sorry. To hear about Andy. How are you doing? They needed to be able to say a few words and to see what my response would be and to just to acknowledge that back. It was really important. So I feel like it's important both ways. You can't just ignore it and pretend like it's not there when everyone in the room knows it's there. So whether it's the doctor who had a loss, the patient who had a loss, still, you can't ignore it totally.
Do you think that, you know, you went back for a couple of weeks and it just didn't work out?
Yeah.
Do you think it would have been better had you had those conversations with the patient? Do you think you would have gotten through it? Or do you think you still would have ended up in the same place?
I think I would have ended up in the same place only because I wasn't in a mental state for that.
Yeah.
And the big, like I said, I really needed that time and what ended up happening in the podcast to change my head. Because my head initially... was, I can't believe I'm talking to somebody about how the fact that they can't get their kid to sleep when all I want to do is to be able to put Andy to bed and have him, you know, not be sleeping. Right. Or I can't believe there came in for a 2-hour fever or something. Like, why are they coming in for that? So that's what things were like right away for me. And what has changed in the meantime, as I've healed more, is now I see those same people. I see somebody coming in whose child had a fever for a couple of hours, and I think, wow, that is really a worried parent. I really need to be able to offer some, I need to talk to them and tell them why I'm not worried about a 2-hour fever, because they really are. And so it gave me more compassion for them and more understanding, because I feel like, wow, they must be really worried to show up here like that. So it made me a more understanding physician in that regard and just think about things a little bit differently.
Yeah. Well, you certainly weren't in a place to have, you weren't in a place where you had any empathy. Your empathy tank was completely empty.
It was.
And so you weren't able to, you needed people to comfort you as opposed to provide any sort of comfort or understanding for.
You're right. So it's just what you have to offer at the time. And I just didn't have enough to offer. And even now it can be a little bit much. I mean, with COVID, the number of teenagers that I see with anxiety and depression is really high. And I deal with that a lot of my day. And there are days, I mean, you saw me a couple of weeks ago, I came home, I was drained because still, first of all, I think I have more compassion now. So I spend way more time with them and a lot more effort. And still, I am experiencing a lot of loss too. So I think that it gets to be a challenge sometimes.
Sure. Well, I'd like to open up for questions. If anyone has a question, you know, obviously we're very open. And so just about any subject is fair game. I'd say if you want to hear more about our story, you can go to Marcy's podcast, which is, again, Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom, episode 1, where we talk about it. And if you want even more raw, is that the right word? a discussion that was back in November, I think, of 2018 when you discussed it on my show. what my show is.
Yeah, I think
at the Paradox. It's getting the spellings on the screen there, but the paradox.com/025. So it's episode 25.
Well,
you can find out more about
it. And actually, also just this past Sunday, I was a guest on a podcast called the Changed Physician Podcast, and that one is really very much like this. It goes into our backstory and kind of how I became a doctor, how we went through medical school and residency together, then the loss of Andy and how that has changed me as a physician. So again, that's the Changed Physician Podcast. It's really is a nice podcast. You've been a guest on that show as well.
Yes.
And it does talk a lot about just physician issues. So that would be a great thing too.
Yeah. So if you're in the Marvel universe and you're interested in the origin stories, that'd be a great episode for you to catch up on. So I don't know if there are any questions that anyone has. I think you can either unmute yourself, or if you want, you can just certainly hit the chat function. I guess I don't know if at this point, I guess I don't think there's a whole lot more that we need. Yeah, go right ahead.
Question from Dr. Herm Sullivan. Thank you for sharing your story. I never knew Andy, but feel like I do now. I do have this one question. You admit to being a changed physician, and I don't see how anyone could not be changed. But how do you teach this? Can you teach others about this vicariously? How do you think young medical students can learn from this? If there's some way without going through something like this to them?
Well, interesting you should ask that question, because I actually was asked to speak before third-year medical students via Zoom this summer for a medical school in Chicago, and just about being okay to show some compassion and be a person too. And it was really, really amazing. And the feedback we got was tremendous. And I mean, some of the students said that it was the best lecture they had heard in their years of medical school so far, because so many of them actually went in with this, you know, desire to help people. And a lot of times they did have personal stories. I mean, if you look at me and you want to listen to that Change Physician podcast, I actually did become a physician because my parents both had cancer when I was growing up and I lost my mom when I was in college. I wouldn't have become a physician without that. But what ends up happening through this process is you are expected to sort of turn off your humanity. In some ways, I mean, I remember back to residency, we lost several patients. And I remember one particular that I feel like I screwed up so badly. So I dealt with all of these patients and I was a rock, right? I never cried. I never showed emotion. I thought, handled it well, professionally. And one time, I had a patient that I had cared for on and off for a year because she'd been in the hospital for a full year in the PEDS ICU. I had gotten to know the parents quite well. There was always one of them spending the night. And then a half an hour before I was to start my shift that day, and I was assigned to the PEDS ICU, and I was caring for her at the time, she died. Very unexpectedly. We did not expect her to just suddenly die like that. And she did. And I went in and I just didn't know what I was going to do. I knew I had to walk into the room. You know, I walk into the room. There's this mom holding her dead 13-month-old in her arms. And I started to break down. I started to tear up. And she hugged me and I held her. I held her and her dead baby between us for probably, you know, 30 seconds. I just held her. And she got done and she looked at me and she said, Marcy, you are going to be a great general pediatrician. And what I heard in my head was, you better be a general pediatrician because you can't handle this at all. You stink at this. There's no way you're going to be the one to tell someone that their baby died. But that's not what she meant. And I didn't know that wasn't what she meant until after I experienced it and I lost my son. What she meant in that moment was, you care. You care for your patients. And somebody is going to be so lucky to have a doctor that cares that much about their patients, that you feel it. And Yeah. So that was the time I, for years, thought I had really messed things up. And I told the medical students that story. And that was so profound to them because they really had started to feel like they had to be that robot. And they couldn't ever show emotion and they couldn't ever act like people. And like, there were some that were feeling like, I don't know that this was the right choice for me. And they just felt so relieved that they could actually show a little bit of humanity and that wasn't going to be completely forbidden, you know?
So much. This is why it didn't work. We really appreciate you getting some nice chat comments too.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
It has been our pleasure. I guess, you know, my parting words in this would be, don't be afraid of people who are in pain. Don't feel like you have to make them better because you're not going to, but acknowledge their humanity and yours. And, you know, you are you and you'll be whoever you are. And so I think that's the sincerity and just the genuineness is probably the thing that's most appreciated by people. And if you have other questions, you can certainly email Marcy@andysmom.com. If you have any questions that you come up later about, you know, how you deal with things as a, within a group maybe, and you can certainly contact me as well. I'm at eric.larson@apcpc.net. Or if you can't remember that, just go to the KCMS website and you can certainly just send an email there and they can get it to me and we can answer those questions. So hope to see you all on December 7th when we talk about COVID-19 and vaccination efforts. So good night, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Paradox. If you like what the doc is doing, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And share the show with your friends. Become a supporting listener to get access to special bonuses at patreon.com/theparadox. Show notes can be found at theparadox.com.